I'm Terry Clark, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, Country Gold Backstage.
You're listening to Country Gold. I'm Terry Clark, and joining me this week is somebody that, oh my gosh, I can't even tell you what a musical hero this woman is to me. Kathy Matea, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's nice to finally make it down.
I know. How many times have I emailed you and stalked you over the last couple of years?
Oh, no, sorry, I'm on the road. Oh, no, you're on the road. Oh, no.
I know.
It's just been crazy.
Over the years, you've made a lot of friends in country music, and you're so well-liked and loved in the industry and respected. I mean, you have so much musical integrity and credibility, and that's something that I think secretly every artist longs to be accepted and have that level of integrity.
You know, it's so interesting to me because I think the challenge, for me at least, is to see that. Like, you know, they always say the music business is high school with money.
Yeah.
and so it's like I can go straight back to high school and I can go, well, you know, they don't respect me as much as they would if I wrote all my own songs. Mm-hmm. Or they don't respect me as much as if I, you know, as they do so-and-so. Or I don't have as many Grammys as X person, you know. And I can miss it if I get caught up in that.
Yeah.
And so lately I've been trying to just be like, well, I've done some stuff. And there's some stuff I haven't gotten to do. And it kind of all balances out, you know. It's like I think my job is to not get distracted by the stuff that doesn't matter.
The clutter in your brain.
Yeah.
The internal committee.
Man, as long as I stay focused on, like, where's the fun?
Yeah.
Where's the life? What? And the hardest part is when that doesn't make sense on paper, you know? When it's like, oh, you know, like you were asking me about my show, and it's been about 3 years now, and my voice started to get wonky. Mm. I'd be on stage and I'd be singing some song I've done for 20 years and some note would not come out the way it always had. And I think, well, I'll pay more attention tomorrow night to that song. And it might happen the next night, it might not.
Yeah.
And I got really scared and I kind of ran from it for a while. And finally I was like, all right, I'm gonna have to deal with this. I'm gonna have to find out what is going on. And it, for me, my way of understanding it now is that it's a menopause thing. Like my voice shifted during that process. And so somewhere along the line, I spent 10 minutes alone with Tony Bennett in a room. It is not the way my life normally is, but this moment happened. And when I got him alone, I said, hey, I want to ask you a question. And he said, yeah. I said, I heard you sing tonight, and I know how old you are. How do you do that?
Mm.
And he said, well, my voice isn't what it once was, but it's a lot better than it was a couple years ago. And he said, I found a teacher, and I dug in. I started working again. He was 78 when I asked him that
question.
Just went to see him. He was 90. Saw him at the Skirmish.
Wow.
So I filed that away in the back of my mind. And when this happened, I went looking. My teacher was 78, my longtime voice teacher. Her health was declining. I found a new teacher for the first time in 35 years. And I dug in. That's been 3 years next month. And I'm telling you, it's been a slog. There's days when I'm like, I don't know how to do this. And then there's days where it's like, oh, my God, my voice is a thing of wonder. And I never know which way it's going to be. So it was like a freaking roller coaster. I'd be like singing. And it would splat out, and I'd get hit by a bus. So I took 6 months off the road to just explore this. And Bill, my longtime guitar player, would just come over. He's coming over this afternoon. He comes over every Thursday. We just sit and play music. We play old songs and new songs. And I was like, Bill, I need to, like, explore from a different point of view. So I'd throw out these wacky songs. And after, like, 6 or 8 months, I was like, I think some of this stuff sounds pretty good. But I don't feel ready yet. But I'm going to have to walk on stage before I feel ready. So we just started playing, the two of us, in tiny rooms, tiny listening rooms, just so I could not lock up from the fear of what my voice. And I'd walk out on stage and say to people, well, I don't know what my voice is going to do tonight, but I'll give you 100% of whatever I got.
That's all you can do.
And it turned out to be a wonderful growing experience. So now there's a record that came out of that process, and I just finished making that, and we're going to take a band out this fall when the record comes out, and it's been an amazing thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Very scary and wonderful, and living in the question of can I still sing or not.
Well, you know, you brought up menopause because Sarah Evans was in here and I was sweating every 5 minutes. I'm like, it's just starting, like, last couple months is starting to happen. and it's become like this topic of conversation. But I've heard that women, and I'm sure Tony Bennett didn't go through menopause, but I've heard that women can have vocal issues. I've heard that.
Yes.
This is the second time I've heard it.
It's different. So if you do that, just call me. I've got a few numbers.
I can
listen and talk to you about it.
I've been all through it. Well, thank you for sharing that. Though that's vulnerable to be able to actually, you know, share with your audience and people and us about, you know, we're all human. And
oh, my God. Terry, I would have these dreams. I'm sure you've had them, but this was like all new. I would dream that I was standing on the stage naked because in fact, I was.
Yeah.
There's nothing but me and Bill and my wonky voice.
And my wonky voice.
But I thought, I can't wait till I'm done with this process and then spring forth fully formed. I realized I was going to have to do it in front of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it changed something for me in that it stopped being about being perfect or being quote unquote good, and it became about being real.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that my audiences really appreciated
that.
They do.
They love authenticity.
And that finding my way through the tight place was about being real about it being tight, and that's what started to open it up. I could relax once I wasn't trying to hide it from anybody anymore. So, and now it's much better. It's much, much better.
Well, that's inspiring. You just kept slugging away at it, and you just didn't roll over and go, well, I guess that's that. You just kept slugging away.
I love it too much. I was not going to walk away without a fight, you know?
Exactly.
I was going to fight for it.
And, you know, speaking of things like voices and the industry and friends, I can't not mention the fact that you were friends with Laurie White, who we recently lost to a very aggressive cancer. And she was, I think, about 52 years old, which is way, way, way too young.
Yeah, I went to her memorial service. It was very, very emotional. And I just, right before she found out about it, I had done a gig with her and kind of reconnected with her, exchanged cell phone numbers, and we were trying to work on when I could make an in the round at the Bluebird and working on schedules and stuff. And then the next thing, you know, they're in the middle of this, you know, movie that came out of nowhere, their whole family. It was just tragic and so unexpected. And she was just so freaking alive, you know, so full of life.
You know, the last year seems to have just been so much tragedy with so many young artists. Like, well, what we would consider young, maybe a 20-year-old might not, but Daryl Singletary was 46 and Troy Gentry was 51 or 52, and Laurie, and it's like it makes you realize what really matters in life. You know, we've been given such an incredible gift, and the fact that we recognize that, and you're working so hard to stay out there doing what you're doing because it's what we live for.
Well, it made me really glad. Moments like that made me really glad that I didn't give up without a fight. I think that if I talk to young people, I teach the kids from Berklee. College of Music every spring when they come to Nashville, and I spend a couple hours just talking with them, and I feel like I'm willing to walk away if that's the right thing. But I think the harder part is to get the yes or no, to risk hearing, oh no, it's time to leave, it's time to stop. I don't think I can find the next right thing for me to do unless I go through that process, because if I walk away because I'm scared, or I stay because I'm unwilling to consider that it might be time to leave, then I don't get, then when I move on to the other thing, I got a monkey on my back. I got a question in my head. And I think it can, you know, I always say to these kids, do you want to know the truth more than you want to not hurt? You know, I would rather grieve in real time and free myself up to go on to the next thing fully. And I think when I look, I look at Laurie, and she was mentoring young people. She was still writing. She was playing gigs. She was very active and kind of on her own terms. It kind of carved out her own niche. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I want to make sure that if I get in that situation, I don't have any regrets, you know, about what I chose to do.
You know, you're great at giving advice, because I remember when I made an album called Fearless back in 2000, we were on the same label, and I turned it into the label, and they did not know what to do with it. It was a very rootsy, organic, more Americana type of record at that time, and I was coming off of two or three platinum records, and I decided that I had to diversify musically, or I was going to die, because I just felt like I was being so pigeonholed with all the up-tempo fun songs. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot more depth than a lot of people even realize today musically. And you came over to my house and you were such a champion and cheerleader for me. And we sat out in my sunroom. This is like one of my best memories since I got a record deal, sitting in my house with Kathy Mattea, and she's looking at me going, Terry, there is a much bigger world out there than what's going on in this country on the radio. There's a big world. There's the UK. There's all kinds of places you can go play this music and people are going to appreciate it. And I really appreciate that, you doing that. And we haven't talked a lot about it since, but it still remains my favorite album I've ever made to this day. And I'm so glad that I just continued on that path and finished the record and put it out there. And
yeah,
you know.
And, you know, the part that we just don't talk about very much is we can love your fun songs and we can love your songs with depth, too. Mm-hmm. It's possible to do both.
Yes.
Your audience, challenge them a little bit.
Yeah.
Take them on a journey, you know. I'm sure that you have people in your audience to this day who are like, I loved you before, and I love you even more since that record. Like, that record meant everything to me.
I had Ashley McBride, who's one of my favorite new artists.
There you go.
Erin Enderlin, another young artist. Like you were saying, when people start coming up to you, that's the album that these new artists are pointing at, going, that album helped form who I became as an artist.
Yeah.
It's and that one.
I think as an artist, you have to decide at a certain point, it's like, okay, am I going to stake my ground and then protect this little piece of soil I've got? Or, like, why am I doing it? Am I doing it for that? Well, you can do that and have success and all of that. But if you have something inside of you knocking at your door that wants to get out, if you don't do that, you'll always wonder.
Exactly.
And some people are, you know, I look at Alan Jackson and it's like, he's just who he freaking is. Mm-hmm. He's just who he is. And he's very consistent. And his writing is really, really good. And I'm not like that. I'm just more musically restless than that.
Yeah,
and it's okay to be both. You know, it's okay to have room for both.
Another one that was just taking up a lot of space in the charts back then, when they were playing women at country music during your era, was Patti Loveless, who,
oh my God,
just amazing. I miss and Sarah Evans and I talked about this yesterday because she was on the show. I miss the character and tone and identity in voices from that era. You knew who it was.
Yeah, who
when
everybody
you
was.
Heard them.
Yeah.
And especially with females, like you and Patty and Trisha and Mary Chapin and Susie, and like you knew who it was the minute you heard them on the radio, and that's something I really miss.
I made this Appalachian record called Cole a few years ago.
I know that.
Patty
yes.
came and sang. She didn't come in. I sent it to her and she did it in her studio. And I heard that thing when they sent it to me. And I had her number and I called. And Emery, her husband, answered the phone. And I was like, Emery, it's Kathy. I just got this track. Can I just say, holy crap. He's like, yeah, I know. I was like, no,
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, I know. That's my girl there.
It's like a banshee meets an angel. And she gave me several passes, and none of them were the same. He said, yeah, I know. When you really get to live with it, it's a pretty amazing thing. And then he put Patty on. She's like, yeah, I was just making the bed. What's up?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Patty, thank you. I mean, it was really, I always loved her voice. I always thought it was amazing. But, I mean, it raised the hair on the back of my neck.
She's got so much soul. And she's got a mournful cry in her voice that you just don't hear a lot. You don't hear it much at all.
And I can't do that. That's the other thing. I want to be Alison Krauss, and I want to be Patti Loveless, because I can't
do
that
stuff.
I mean, it's true. We all want to, you know, you want to do the thing that your voice can't do. It's like the challenge of it. And, you know, I kind of had to make my peace with it and be like, oh, you know, I can try to cut loose like that, and it just sounds stupid.
What's one of your favorite Patti Loveless songs?
You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive, her version of that song.
You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that one. She's done some really amazing covers of stuff and pulled stuff from way back, and she makes it her own. You know, Patti Loveless, she doesn't work a lot, and I'm not ever sure exactly what she's up to, but she's somebody that's not been out touring a whole lot in the last few years, and the minute she does, I'm going to go like buy some tickets to some stuff and make sure I go see her because she's so great. Yeah. You're in the studio you've been in the studio recording new music, and you've put out your first new album of new material in 5 years?
It'll come out probably September is what we're looking at. Tim O'Brien produced it, who is my old friend and collaborator. We've sung on each other's records, and I've cut songs of his, and he's played on my
records.
He's
so talented.
He's just a renaissance man. And after going through all this vocal stuff, I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning one night and sat up in bed and was like, I need to ask Tim O'Brien to do this record with me. Because he's like the safest guy in the world, like, you know, so laid back and just so musical. And so it's been just a delight, really.
I can't wait to hear this. What stylistically, what would you, because I know you've had many different influences from all over the globe, and you've toured a lot in the UK and Ireland and really built a following and audience over there. So what can we kind of expect from this?
It's very eclectic because it came out of this, this living room thing with Bill. So I'd walk in and throw a blues song out and be like, Bill, no one will ever hear me sing this, but I want to try it because I want to learn something. And there's some jazz stuff. There's some folk stuff. There's some Appalachian stuff. There's one thing that's like a freaking jug band. It's like, where did that come from?
Who cares?
and some gospel-y stuff. It's just it's a real mix of things, but that was part of it too, was that Tim really is deep into all kinds of roots music, and I thought he will be able to tie this together with a sound. And it was just great working with him.
So your album's coming out in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are your plans for the rest of the year? Are you going to finish the record, stay around town, or are you hitting the road?
I am doing just some dates with Bill. I have a podcast that hasn't started yet, but it's I have like 5 interviews done, and I'm in the editing process. I would have been further along, but my computer almost crashed twice last week.
Yes, so. We've discussed our technical woes.
Oh, Lord.
Text,
and,
which is another technical woe.
All that stuff that you pay other people to do.
Right.
When you start doing it, it's like, well, it's not as easy as they make it look.
Well, how do we hear the podcast?
When it goes up, I'll put it on my Facebook page and on my website and stuff. There'll be a link to it.
Great.
And it's called How Music Saved My Life. And
it's just stories
of people. Like for instance, I'm in the grocery store the other night. It's 10 o'clock at night. I run out to get some things. The guy is singing as I'm checking out. I'm like, you're singing? He's like, yeah. Yeah, that's how I get through 8 hours at Kroger's. I sing. I said, it sounds familiar. He said, Roberta Flack. So while he's checking me out, we're singing, I'm in my pain with his fingers,
pain
in my life.
And
Preston, the guy who's checking me out, are singing in the grocery store at 10 o'clock at night.
Did he have any idea he was doing a duet with Kathy Mattea?
No,
Kathy Mattea?
No.
He said, you wouldn't believe
my collection at home. He said, you wouldn't believe the records I have at home.
He said,
really, I'd die without music. And I hear these stories everywhere, and I'm like, you know, it's such a crazy time in the world. It's really good to talk about what sustains
it. It is.
And how important music is in that.
And that's why it's important for me to have artists like you whose records absolutely saved my life. And I came to Nashville in 1987 with a guitar, no green card, no job, no car, nothing.
Girl, now they send you right back home. They come to your house and they'd say, yeah, we love you. You got to go. I'm glad you got in under the wire.
Well, thank you for inspiring me. You and Reba. I can name 5 artists, and you're one of those 5. You, Reba, the Judds, Ricky Skaggs, and Barbara Mandrell all inspired me.
I love hearing you talk about Barbara Mandrell.
I love Barbara Mandrell.
People don't talk about her very much anymore.
Oh, what a show person. I mean,
she's amazing.
I watched her entertain and just always smiling, vibrant, always making eye contact with people. And I feel like she taught me how to connect with people. And I know I watched her on TV. It's a whole different thing, but there are certain things I've learned from every one of you that I think shaped who I became as an artist. Don't you feel like there was sort of a weight lifted when you were able to just, okay, well, I'm going to sing these songs and now I'm going to make more and do those two?
I just feel really lucky to still be doing it.
Me too.
I mean, I just feel very lucky to have a place in music and be doing it in a way that I enjoy still. But the one thing I want to say is, you know, I watched the Nashville show and it's very soap opery and stuff. And I'm like, the real story is so interesting. You don't need to soap it up. My first manager, Bob, used to say to me, Music Row was your college campus, Kathy. Mm. And, you know, I was in the Singers Union, and every Christmas, I was on the board of directors of AFTRA, you know, which is like, you know, sounds really big. It was like this little tiny office. But I was in the union because I did sessions. And every Christmas, we would all get together from AFTRA, all the singers, the people who did all the vocals in the studios, and we would go caroling up and down Music Row. And we'd show up in people's offices, and everybody would come out, and we'd sight read and sing these elaborate hymns and they'd go, yay, and then we'd walk into the next place. And every spring, they'd pull a flatbed truck in front of the CMA building, and half the bands in Nashville would get up and play, and they'd roast hot dogs.
I miss the hot dog days. I miss the hot dog days.
There'd be a block party on Music Row. Everybody would stop working.
Aww.
And, those days... It's a link back to the way Music Row was formed and the way the music business formed in this town. And it may be different, but it's still much more homey and, you know, it's more of a neighborhood than, I think, New York and L.A. from what I've heard.
One of the things we did was we went to the Hall of Fame when it was back off Music Row. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking into the Hall of Fame in 1987 and looking around going, Kathy Mattea used to work here. I was picturing you in your little, with your name tag and your little,
polyester outfit.
And I was like, it was part of the magic of moving to Nashville to me in my brain about how somebody could start as a tour guide and wind up winning a Grammy Award. And it was part of what drove me to just do it. And it took me 8 years to get a record deal. But your story was one of those ones that I kept going back to going, you know, you can do it. You can do it. She did it.
It's
inspirational.
It's true. Nashville was like that then. If you kind of did good business and you had some talent and you worked hard and you got to know people, people would help you out. They would give you a break. They'd remember you. They'd tell somebody about you. And the word of mouth would spread, and it kind of grew. And, there wasn't – people were like, well, I'm doing a showcase at the Bluebird. But there were no showcases at the Bluebird. You just played at the Bluebird because it was one of the places to play. You know, it was like it wasn't all much more informal. And I'm glad to hear that inspired you because I think I was kind of naive. I just kind of thought, oh, yeah, well, of course. I'll just go down there. And
I wish I could have gotten a job working at the Hall of Fame because I love trivia and I love the history of country music, but I didn't have a green card, so I couldn't get a job. I had to paint houses for cash and play down on Lower Broadway for tips. There was just no choice the time. But that would have been my dream job when I moved to Nashville.
How old were you when you came to town?
18.
God.
Yeah.
19.
Yeah.
I know. It sounds so young now, doesn't it? Didn't you feel like so grown up at 18? No.
I did.
I'm a grown up.
Well, thank you so much for coming
for
in, Kathy.
Me.
I knew it was going to be this great when you got here. Thank you so much for coming
you're
and
welcome.
Being on
you're welcome.
Country Gold. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Everybody listening. And thanks, Kathy Mattea, for joining me this week.
Country Gold with Dave.